Okay, so you can meet me at Acts chapter 27, if you would. And this is one of the studies that I wish, it's so hard. We got to stop partway through the chapter, of course. There's no way in the world on a Wednesday night we're going to cover 44 verses, but I wish we would add enough time to do so, because this is a tremendous privilege that is before us. This is a very exciting chapter. It's going to deal with Paul leaving Caesarea and going to Rome. He's going to be in the middle of a storm. There's going to be a shipwreck. The interesting thing, I did some research on the chapter. There are a lot of people over the years that have studied this chapter. Shipbuilders have studied the chapter. I'm going to give you a description tonight. Hopefully with words I can paint for you a little bit of a picture as to what kind of boat they were on in the middle of that storm. But shipbuilders have studied this chapter. This is the most detailed chapter that you will find on a shipwreck anywhere, what's recorded here. It is 100% accurate, historically speaking, and then at the same time, you have a lot of spiritual lessons that are found within this chapter. So we're gonna do what we can to pull out some of those spiritual lessons tonight. We won't get very far, but there's some things that I want you to see, and then we're going to miss a couple weeks, then we'll come back and we'll get into it. But let me start you on the introduction of the paper. It says, last week in our study of Acts, we finished chapter 26. The end of that chapter, it was determined that after Paul had had his trial before Festus and Agrippa, that he would be sent to Rome, for he had appealed to Caesar. As we now come to chapter 27, we will see that the entire way through this chapter to chapter 28:16, Luke will give us the details of the journey from Caesarea to Rome. That's interesting. You got a chapter and a half of this journey that they take. Okay, so watch this. This section could be entitled Paul's Storm Stories. That's what we could call it. Because as we step into chapter 27, it will not be long until we find Paul's ship in a storm. As we study this section, we're going to gather lessons from this storm that can be applied to our lives when we are going through storms. Storms are just part of living in this fallen world, and they often show up frequently. I'm going to give you some verses just to remind you about a few things. Job 5:7, he wrote this, "Yet man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upward," just like a fire, and you sit around a campfire and the sparks jump up out of the fire. The sparks are kind of represent the trouble in man's life. And as we go through life, there are sparks, there are storms. James chapter 1, 2 through 4, James wrote this, "My brethren, count it all joy when," not if, "when you fall into divers temptations." That would be the trials of life, the everyday trials that we go through. "Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but let patience have a perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." There's a lot to be said on what James writes there. I'll just comment on a couple things. First of all, James makes it very clear that it's not if we fall, but it's when we fall into these trials of life. And then if you notice the second word in verse 4, he says this, "But let patience have her perfect work." We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, about the need to surrender at times and just step back and let God do what he needs to do. It's hard to do, but that's what we are called to do a lot of times. We're just called, because we will not have control over the situation, so we're called to step back and let God work, because ultimately he's got a plan. He permits things to occur, and then he has plans. And you have Romans 8:28, which you know, and then 35 through 37, Paul wrote this, "We know that all things," that would include the storms, "work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." Then he goes on, I jumped you on down in the chapter, he says, "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, distress, persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword?" And I'll just point to those and say, all these storms, these could be considered storms. Then he says this in verse 36, "As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter." He says this, "Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us." We are conquerors in the storm, because the storms, as Romans 8:28 says, work together for good in our lives. So they are frequent. I've often said this, you are in one of three places in your life. You're either going into a storm, you are in a storm, or you are coming out of a storm. That you're in one of those three places. And that cycle just kind of repeats itself as we go through life, is what it does. God uses it. It's a refining process in our life. It is a refining process. It is used to strengthen our faith as we trust in Him. So we're going to come back tonight. We're just going to start into the storm here a little bit. So that's what we're going to look at, first of all, the storm part one. So watch 27:1. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. Now, this guy's going to prove to be very interesting. Right away, you're introduced to him in verse 1. He is a centurion. Okay, so let me read what I have for you. Then as we go on down here, I'll get you a little bit more info on centurions. It says, Paul was placed under the watch of a man by the name of Julius, and he was a centurion of Augustus' band. This man was a Roman soldier who would have been given authority over 100 soldiers under him. This man will turn out to be a special friend to Paul. Possibly Paul won him to the Lord on a ship, or possibly he was in the trial that was held before Agrippa and Festus, and he was saved there. And I'm just speculating. We don't even know if he was saved, but I want to show you what he does is completely out of the ordinary. Now watch this. We do not know, but we do know he will treat Paul kindly. It could have been just that God was working in the guy's heart. Or it could have been that he got saved along the line somewhere. Watch verse 2. And entering into a ship of Adramyttium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coasts of Asia. One Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. Now, there's a couple things said here in 1 and 2 that you miss at a quick reading. So I think I have it here. So watch this. Here in verse 1 and 2, we read something very interesting, something that was not normal. Paul had two companions with him on this journey. Now listen, prisoners were not permitted to take companions. Not at all. Paul's got two of them. Now watch this. In verse 1, Luke says that we would sail to Italy. So Luke's with him on this. He's got his own personal doctor here on this trip. And here in verse 2, we see that Aristarchus also joined Paul. Now, we had read about him before. He was a traveling companion of Paul on his third missionary journey. The question is, why would Festus allow Paul to take companions because no prisoners were permitted to do so? Possibly because he knew Paul was innocent and he wanted him to be taken care of. We know that ultimately God moved his heart and had Luke sent along to record a journey and Aristarchus to be a helper for Paul. So God's moved, put two helpers by his side, without a doubt, in the middle of this. Gives him companions, but that's highly unusual. And the unusual things do not stop there. Watch verse 3. And the next day, we touched at Sidon. I'm going to show you a map here in a little bit and show you which way they went. And Julius, now watch this. Julius is the centurion that has been assigned to be over the prisoners, be over Paul. So watch what he does. And Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go in unto his friends and to refresh himself. Now, here's what Julius does. He gives him permission to be able to get off the ship, to be able to go. Let me do this. Let me advance this, and I got to back up, okay? Because I want to show you something. So they left down here at Caesarea, and they jumped right up to Sidon is where they stopped, right here. So what was right there was a church that Paul had started or that he knew of anyhow. So there were other believers there. Now let me go back here. I can't even remember where. I think that's where we were at. So apparently there were other believers there. This guy gives permission to Paul to be able to leave the ship, which is highly unusual, because if you would have been if you'd have been a centurion back there and they would have put you in charge of the prisoners and you lost one of them, you know what happened? The very penalty that was determined to be exercised against that prisoner was then handed down to you. So he's taken a huge chance by letting Paul go. There's something here between the two, without a doubt. Whether it is God moving the guy's heart, and if it is, he's certainly his hands all over this. Whether the guy got saved back at in the hall whenever they were at the trial before Festus and Agrippa, or whether he got saved along the line here on the ship somewhere, we don't know. Or maybe even outside of all of those things, maybe he came to know the Lord. We don't know, because I'm going to show you a list here and show you that other centurions would be what I call commendable people. Let me go on here. Watch this. Under verse 3. Here's an unusual happening. Julius allowed Paul to leave the ship and to visit with friends at a church. We need to understand that when Julius was placed in charge of prisoners, it was his responsibility to be sure that they were delivered to their destination. If he failed, then the punishment assigned to the prisoner was then placed upon him. So to give Paul the liberty to leave the ship was really an act of generosity, without a doubt. But here's some history. I want to show you something. Let me give you a little bit to think about. This is kind of setting us up. I hate this, because we're going to set this up and then we're going to have to review all this whenever we finally get back here. But anyhow, it's all right. Watch this. Rome did not do so well when they chose their rulers, like their emperors. Okay, let me say this. Well, let me read the next line. But their centurions seemed to be men that were commendable. And I'm going to give you a few examples. Okay, so they did very well, it seemed like, whenever they chose men for the military. But they didn't do very well whenever they chose political rulers. Sound familiar? Very familiar. A whole lot like the United States of America. So over the years, there's been some guys that were real duds for presidents, but under them in the military, there were guys that were very commendable. So Rome was much the very same way. But let me show you a few centurions that are listed in the scriptures. Okay, Matthew 8, 5 through 10, you have one here. It says, when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion, beseeching him, watch this, and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. And the centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I'm a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this man, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. Here's a Gentile that puts the Jews to shame, and he's a centurion. Watch your next one. Mark 15, 38 and 39. And the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. This is whenever Jesus died. And when the centurion, here's another one, which stood over against him, saw that he cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, truly, this man was the Son of God. He had great insight, and I believe that day he got saved when Jesus died, because he was aware of who Jesus claimed to be and the events that took place. Then Acts chapter 10, watch this one, 1 and 2. And it was a certain man in Caesarea named Cornelius, a centurion of the band called the Italian band. Watch what it says about him. A devout man and one that feared God with all his house, which gave much alms to the people and prayed to God always. So you've got this list of these centurions. Watch, I'll give you one more that I thought about. Acts 23, 16 through 18 says, and when Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, that was the Jews that were lying in wait to kill Paul, he went and entered into the castle and told Paul, and Paul called one of the centurions unto him and said, bring this young man unto the chief captain, for he hath a certain thing to tell him. So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul the prisoner called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee, who has something to say to thee. So here's a guy that listens to Paul. Okay, so watch the next page. Then there is the centurion in Acts 27 that we have right here. From these passages, we can see that at least these centurions were men who were commendable for that which they did. So it's no different with this guy. You've got a centurion here, and he's, for some reason, probably because of the hand of God, is very gracious to the Apostle Paul. He's very gracious to him, and so whenever they come to Sidon, he lets Paul leave the ship and those that are with him and go and refresh themselves with the other believers and then trust them to come back. Completely unheard of. Maybe let me say this, just a thought that comes to my mind, just a thought. You know, God knew what was ahead on this journey. God knew what was ahead. And we're going to get into this a little bit tonight. He knew the storm that was coming. He knew that in the middle of the storm that basically the entire crew, which would, with the exception of one, which would be Paul, they lost all hope for surviving the storm because it was that bad. It was that bad. You got to understand, they traveled. They didn't have GPS, and they didn't have ship-to-shore radios. This wasn't a Carnival cruise. It was not a Disney cruise. It was a very rugged ship, and they used the stars to go by. They're going to go through a period of time here for 14 days without being able to see the stars. 14 days on the sea without being able to see the stars, and that's what they used for their GPS. God knew all of that. So maybe, just maybe, and I'm just saying this, and I don't know, but maybe this is God's way of encouraging Paul to say, look, I'm in charge of this whole thing. Watch this. I'm just in charge of this whole thing. And I'm going to show you that right off the beginning here. And I'm going to show you through this man, Julius, that is the centurion that is over you. And I'm going to show you what I can do with this guy. And if I can do this with him, if the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and this guy's not a king, but I'm just using that as an example, then surely I can keep you alive in the storms. Possibly. God often gives us encouragement before the trials of life. Watch 4 through 9 now. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. Okay, so now what I want you to notice as we go through this, that there is a storm building. Now you are introduced to contrary winds, verse 5. And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, the city of Lycia. And there the centurion found the ship of Alexander sailing unto Italy, and he put us there in. Now just stop for a moment. I just want to pause here. I don't have this on your paper. The ship now that they get loaded in is a grain ship. It is a grain ship. So what you got to understand is this, that back then there were no passenger ships. There were none of those. You didn't have passenger ships like you have today. None of that. These were ships that were transporting goods from one place to another. So if they wanted to transport prisoners, they would put them on with these goods and would to get them to wherever they needed them to go. And so they would be put on ships that were carrying these goods from one port to another. Well, if you notice in verse 6 again, it says this, and the centurion found the ship of Alexander sailing into Italy. So that's where they needed to go to get to Rome. So he puts them on this ship, and that is a ship that is going to be loaded down with grain. And you know that because once they get in the midst of the storm, deeper into this chapter, we're going to be told that they throw the grain overboard. They throw the grain overboard, which is very interesting, because if you are a guy that owns a ship and you have a crew and you're paying the crew, you don't get paid if you don't deliver the goods. We'll get to that, but that won't be for a while down the road. Okay, so verse 7. And when we had sailed slowly many days, that was because of the wind, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind, watch, here we go again, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete over against Salmon, and hardly passing it, came into a place which is called the Fair Havens. Now, it sounds like That's the place you want to be if you're on a ship in the Fair Havens. That was not the case. The Fair Havens was not a place to lodge, as you will see. It says, nigh whereunto was the city of Lycia. Now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them. We're going to stop right there for a moment. So come back up here where I have 4 through 9. Let me see what I have under here, and then I'll give you a few things. In these verses, we can see the storm beginning to build. The winds were contrary. The winds would not allow them to sail the way they desired. Sailing was now dangerous, and the fast was now past. Now, what that means is this. Watch this. The fast took place on the Day of Atonement. That was the only day that there was a fast. This would have been, and this year, it's believed, October, about October 5th. So they're beyond October 5th. So they're deep in, they're going deep into the fall. And as the fall approached, the sailing became more and more dangerous. And it would get to the point where at a certain time of year, you just didn't go out into the sea because it was way too dangerous for them. So let me show you, okay, let me take a little bit of time here and I want to show you something. Okay, so if you look over, well, let me just show you. See these blue arrows? That's the wind direction. Okay, that's the way the wind blows. So they leave Caesarea, they go to Sidon. Their intent is to hug this coast and get over here and end up either up this way or around this way through here to get up to Rome. That's their intent, to hug the coast. So they come up to Sidon, they come over, right here is where they get on the grain ship. There it even says that, change to a larger grain ship. Right here. They sail around here. Their intent is to go this way, but the winds are pushing them. So the winds push them around to where they come down to Salmone. Then they come around here. There's the Fair Havens. That's where I just left off, the Fair Havens. What they're going to do is they're going to try to get around here to Phoenix. Phoenice is what it says here, and that's not Phoenix, Arizona, just so you know that, to help you out with your geography. So they're going to try to get there to be able to pull in there and be in port for whatever length of time it takes. But when they leave the Fair Havens and they get out here, they're going to run into what's known as a Euroclydon, which is, I'm going to call it on the paper, I'm going to call it a typhoon is what they're going to run into, which is extremely strong winds. That's why the course comes out here. So you see what it says there, ship lost in a storm. So they're right, as they go through here, they are at the mercy of the winds as they go through there. I cannot imagine that. I cannot even begin to imagine that. Years ago, whenever I was a kid, I don't know, I think I was 12 years old, and we went to Florida for, my dad pulled me out of school, my sister pulled, sister and brother-in-law pulled her kids out of school, and we all went to Florida. We're going down to Florida. Went for about a week or 10 days or so. But one of the things my dad said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go deep sea fishing. Oh, great. I can't wait for this. Well, it sounded just absolutely amazing. Till we got out there, and one minute you could reach out and touch the water. And it's blue sky, too. It's not like it's stormy. You could touch the water one minute, and then the next minute you were 15 feet above the water. And then you were back down, you could touch water. And that, I like rocking chairs and I love swings. But I got so stinking seasick. So seasick. I don't want to gross you out. I took a Dramamine. You know what Dramamine are supposed to? That thing come out of me like a BB. It come out of me, you couldn't even keep anything down long enough for it to dissolve. And it was absolutely awful. Then years later, Penny and I took a cruise ship and out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, or someplace down there. I don't know where it was. But anyhow, I said, that's never going to happen to me again. So we took the medication and we went. And I'm glad I did, because we're on a ship that's like 300 feet long and I don't know how many stories high. And in the middle of the night, we got into some rough waters. And it, that great big ship, it beat it on the water. Bang, bang, bang. But it all held together just fine, and it cleared up, and we weren't sick or anything. I can't imagine what these guys had here. Let me come back here to your paper, if I could. So that was the fall. Watch verse 10 now. Watch. Now, you've got Paul is on a ship, of course, and he's a seasoned sailor because he's traveled thousands upon thousands of miles in his journeys. Verse 10. Okay, well, let me read verse 9. And when much time was now spent, when sailing was now dangerous because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said unto them, "Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only to the lading of the lading and ship, but also of our lives." So he speaks up because he knows something about sailing. He's been on the ships before. Watch what I have here on your paper. Paul was very experienced in travel, and therefore he stood up and he told those in charge that this was not a good idea to continue. Now, I want to go down to verse 11, then I want to consider something. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. So they brushed off his statement. He knew what he was talking about. He knew what he was talking about, with the exception that there would be no lives lost, but they are going to lose all, they're going to lose the, all the furniture. I'm going to call it the furniture on the ship. They're going to lose the grain on the ship. They're going to lose all of those things. And so he was right about that, but they didn't want to listen to him. Watch verse 12, if you would. Let me jump down here. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, that was the fair havens. That's not the place to winter up. The more part, now don't miss what that says. The more part, the majority, advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenice, or Phoenix, as it says on the map, and there to winter, which is an haven of Crete and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. So Paul gives them advice and they don't take it. Now, I want to give you something. I was doing a lot of reading over this and thinking about this, and here's something that came to my mind. What he said in verse 10 is worth fighting over. If you're on a ship and you see it heading into some kind of a storm where you're not only going to lose what you're hauling, but there's going to be lives lost, that's worth standing up for. That's my thought here. Paul tells them what he believes. They don't take his advice. They turn around and the majority says, no, we're not going to winter up here in the fair havens. We're going to go around. We're going to make it to Phoenice. And they're not going to make it to Phoenice because the wind's going to get them and carry them out. So they're not going to make it. So Paul was right about the whole thing. But here's what I saw in this. Here's what I saw. And I want you to listen to this. Paul could have pushed really hard here, couldn't he? He could have pushed really hard. He didn't do it. He spoke his mind. He gave his thoughts. He knows deep down inside. He knows something. He knows this, that God has promised to get him to Rome. And so he backs away. And I want to say this, that Paul no doubt understood that God was going to use this situation. He was going to use this situation for his glory in the midst of it. And that's exactly what's going to happen, because the power of God is going to be made known to these guys on the ship. And so Paul backs away. And I thought about that, and I thought, what would I have done? What would I have done here? Would I have pushed it? Would I have pushed it, and would I have got involved and maybe got into a big argument there? And then I thought about this. I thought, you know what? If I was there and I did that, you know what I'd have done? I'd have got in God's way. I'd have been in his road. He wouldn't have, because he had a plan in the middle of all of this. And so it made me step back in my life, and it made me ask the question, how many times has there been a situation where God wants to work in somebody's life, but instead of me being patient, I step in and then I get in the way? I just talked to somebody about that not too long ago, and I can't even remember who it was. But they said this to me. They said, look, we don't want to get in God's way. If God's doing something in this person's life, I don't want to be in their way. I don't want to be in his way. I don't want to get in there, and I don't want to get involved in all of this and mess up what he's going to do, because he's got a plan in the middle of all of it. And that was the case right here. And so Paul, he speaks his peace. He says, look, this isn't a good idea. He doesn't say this, but I'm just going to paraphrase it. I've been down this path before. I've sailed these waters before, and I know this time of year, this is not a good time to go. And what's going to happen is this, we're going to lose everything in a ship, and good chance we're going to lose lives in the middle of all of this. And he speaks his peace, and they say, you know what? No, we're going to take the word of the majority here, and we're going to go. And they're going to be wrong, although there's not going to be any lives lost, but they're going to lose all the cargo off the ship. But the point that I want you to understand is this, that he had enough discipline to know when to step back and to say, okay, God, this is yours. This is yours. You're the one that is in control of the storm. You can calm the seas. You can calm the winds. So I've said my piece. I'm going to step back. I think it would be good for all of us to learn that. And I'm talking to myself in the midst of this because I'm a fixer. I'm a fixer, and when things aren't right, I want to get in, I want to fix it, and I want to wade right into the pack, no matter what it's like, and I want to do what I think needs to be done. And I wonder this, looking back on my life, how many times have I got in his way? How many times have I got into a situation and got in there, and I blocked God from working because I wouldn't do what Paul did here and just step back and say, okay, God, you're the God of this situation. You're the one that said, I'm going to Rome. You've got me on this ship and we're going to Rome, and you knew this storm was coming. And so I'm going to trust you in the middle of all of it. Look, come on back to your paper under 11 and 12 there, Acts 27, 11 and 12. Watch this. They refused to listen to the wisdom of Paul. Instead, they believed the more part, which was the majority of the people on board. So I wanted to make an application with that, because I think that stood out to me there in verse 12 whenever it said the more part advised. So here's the application. This choice by the majority is going to lead them into the middle of a storm and right into a shipwreck. There are times when the majority is correct, but there have been many times in the scriptures when the majority was completely wrong. 1 Samuel, the majority of the people wanted a king to be like the other nations. They were wrong because they were rejecting God. 1 Kings 22, what we're looking at on Sunday mornings, the majority of the prophets were completely wrong whenever they advised Ahab, and Micaiah was correct. The majority called out for Jesus to be crucified. The majority of the Jews called out for him to be crucified, their king, and they crucified their king. The next one, the majority have chosen the broad way, which leads to destruction. So time after time after time, the majority is not right. So watch what I have here. Let us be careful not to be led down the wrong path by the majority. If it is required, then we must be willing to stand alone. 2 Timothy 4, 16 and 17. In my first answer, no man stood with me, Paul said, but all men forsook me. I pray God that it may not be laid to their charge. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, that by me, the preaching might be fully known, and that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. Paul said, I'd stand alone. And I'm going to say this, that there's times whenever we got to stand alone. Just like going back to Sunday morning, Micaiah. Just like Micaiah. Boy, I just looked at the time, and I shouldn't have done that. Watch 13 through 20 real quick here. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, there rose against it a tempestuous wind called Euryclidon. And when the... Let me see, what am I going to? Verse 20. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island, which is called Claudia, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship and fearing lest they should fall into the quicksand, straight sail, and so were driven. And we, being exceeding tossed with the tempest, the next day they lightened the ship, and the third day we cast out our own with our own hands the tackling of the ship. So now they've started to throw the grain out in the tackle. Verse 20, and when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was now taken away. And they're going to be in that time of no stars for 14 days. Come on back here. I want to show you something. I'm going to run down through this. After Paul's warning, they believed that they had an opening to sail, but it was only the calm before the storm. They found themselves in the middle of a typhoon, and all hope of survival was carried away with the storm. We will get to a few lessons in a moment, but first, we must understand what this ship was like, and I wanted to give you this. This was a ship with no rudder. It was about 160 feet long. So it would go from the other end of the fellowship hall and stick out this end of the church over here about 10 feet. It had no rudder. Here's what it had. It had two oars that stuck out the back for a way to guide it. That's all. So in this wind, they pulled the oars up. They pulled the oars in. The sail was one square sail that worked well when sailing with the wind, but it could not, it should say tack. I got the wrong word. T-A-C-K. It could not tack or sail into the wind. Okay. Because that sail was not adjustable. Just one big square. They were in the middle of the sea and they were helpless. They began to throw things out of the ship to lighten it so that it would not take on water and sink. They actually brought ropes around the bottom and tied the ship together because the storm became so severe. Whenever we get back, I'll back up here and we'll talk about this. But let me give you a couple lessons from the storm. Okay. First of all, number one is this. The storm happened while they were in the center of the will of God. I don't want you to miss that. They're not out. Paul's right in the middle of the will of God. He's going to Rome. God told him he was going to go to Rome. They are right in the middle of the will of God. Watch this. Sometimes it is God's will that we go through situations in which we are completely unable to control the situation. Even in the middle of his will, these things happen. Let me show you. How about Matthew 14, real quick? It says, and straightway, Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship. You know what that means? He made them. He forced them. They didn't want to get in. They argued that night. He said, get in the boat. They said, we're not going to get in the boat. He said, I said, get in the boat. And they lost. They had to get in the boat. But why didn't they want to get in? The reason was they're fishermen. They can redisguise. They know what's coming. They know there's a storm coming. And Jesus is sending them right in the middle of a storm. Watch this. And it go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. When he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it is the spirit. And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, when he took his eyes off of Jesus, watch what happened. He was afraid. Fear entered in. And he began to sink. And beginning to sink, and he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? So here was the situation where Jesus sent the disciples right out in the middle of the storm. And I give you that because of what people think. They think, well, I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I follow the Lord. I shouldn't have any problems in my life. That is not biblical. There's going to be storms, and sometimes it's his will that we go into the middle of the storms, because in the middle of the storms, you're going to learn things there that you would never learn. You know what Peter learned? Peter learned that he could walk on the water. He learned that he could walk on the water whenever he kept his eyes on the Lord. He could rise above the storms. He learned that if he took his eyes off the Lord, that he would sink and that fear would enter into his life. He learned that the Lord was but a hand stretch away from him at any time that he wanted to cry out. Jesus was there. Lessons learned in that storm that they would have never learned anywhere else. Same for us. Same for those that are on the boat with Paul. Watch what I have here. Peter and the disciples learned many things in the storm. Peter learned that he needed to keep his eyes on Jesus when going through the storms. Those in Acts 27 would learn of the mighty power of God, and they would learn of his love for them as they would go through the typhoon. Second lesson, storms get us out of our comfort zones. That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all. You know this? Physically, if we get into a rut, if we get into a slump physically and we don't do too much, you know what happens? You start to lose muscle atrophy. You start to lose the muscle. You start to lose your strength. You start to get shaped a little bit different than what you were before because you're not moving. You're not getting the exercise that you need. You need to move a little bit somehow, some way. You need to do something because if you just sit, you end up in that situation where you just basically start to deteriorate. The same is true spiritually. It's true spiritually. And so storms get us out of those comfort zones. Jeremiah 48:11, God said this about Moab. He said, Moab hath been at ease from his youth, and he has settled on his lees, and hath not been emptied from vessel to vessel, neither hath he gone into captivity. Therefore, his taste remained in him, and his scent is not changed. Moab there is compared to a bottle of wine when the dregs settle in the bottom, the bitter dregs. And so that's what happens in our lives whenever we get locked into these comfort zones. Conclusion. Boy, I got a lot to say about all this, and I'm out of time, so I'm rushing here. We'll back up. It's good. Conclusion. It is good for change to come into our lives. Change is a good thing. You say, oh, I like change. If I can do it, let me be in control of it. No, that's not the way that it always works. It causes us to exercise our faith, which makes us spiritually stronger. Moab had settled, not been tried, and therefore it was like wine full of dregs in the bottom. Sometimes it's good for us to be shaken up and be made to exercise our faith. And that's what storms do. There's so much here. There is so much here. And I'm completely out of time, and I'll apologize to the people downstairs right now for running over. But let me close you in prayer. Father, thank you so much. Thank you for your word, Lord. What a fascinating story here. To look and historically accurate, to be able to look at this storm and this shipwreck and what Paul and those on the ship encountered. And Lord, just so many lessons from all of this tonight. Lord, so many lessons. Might we be reminded that the storms of life are going to come. And Lord, you're in control of those things. You're in control. And in those storms, we can learn some valuable lessons, lessons that we'd never learn apart from the storm. So Lord, might our focus be upon you in the storm, like Peter. Keep our focus on you so we can rise above the storm, so that fear will not have a place within us, but we will trust you. Lord, whenever we do take our eyes off of you and we begin to sink, might we remember that you're just an arm reach away, just to cry out and reach for you in the midst of it. Father, help us not to become complacent. Lord, use the storms to stir us up. Use them to stir us up, to exercise our faith. We need that. We need that. Lord, help us not to be spiritually stale. Now, Lord, take us home safely. Give us a good week, the rest of the week. Bring us back on Sunday, ready to be taught by the Spirit. We pray it all in Jesus' name. Amen.